Good evening, folks. My name is Julian, and I'm an alcoholic. A lot of you. I usually like to say thank you to the committee, and especially, don't be too hard on this committee. They'll make other mistakes, too, for inviting me here. I know that some of you have heard me talk before, and I sure appreciate being invited back here so soon. I spoke here about 12 years ago. and I don't usually get invited back that quick. I got some notes here because I'm getting so old I can't remember what they were. First, I'd like to say that I've got an awful job of following some of the best speakers I've ever heard, and I've been in AA a long time. You can tell by looking at me I've been somewhere a long time. But I think Keith made one of the finest talks I ever heard, and of course Murray always does. And Ramona, I've always loved her. I knew her when she was a real long-haired Indian. And she was just as mean as she said she was. But I do like to say thank you to you people for inviting me here. My wife and I have been blessed by having been invited to a lot of places. You find my story. One of the fellows I was talking to said he heard me talk in California, and I do. It's just the way I feel tonight. I feel like the little boy that was eating breakfast one morning. He was about 10 years old, and he had never spoken a word. And he said, this damn gravy's lumpy. And they all jumped up, they hollered, and they went on, and they said, my Lord, we've never spoke. What happened? What's so wonderful? He says, everything's been all right up to now. And that's just the way I feel. Because it has been. You'll find my story a little different, like yet unlike many you've heard. And before I go any further, I'd like for all of you to know that anything that I say is my own opinion, and not necessarily that of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I always reserve the right to change my mind right after the meeting if you want to argue about it. Because I know I'm not supposed to be good at this. I say my story is a little different. Most people you hear up and get up. See, I started my drinking in college. I never had any trouble with alcohol in college. I never went to college. it didn't give me any trouble in high school either. I'm a Virginia hillbilly. I was born. I usually ask people until I got the wrong answer. I asked them if they can hear me in the back. The one night I said, can y'all hear me in the back? And the fellow said, no. And some guy down front says, I can. I'll be glad to trade seats with you. Yeah. But I got my education in a one-room school back in the mountain that was really further advanced than some of our colleges are today. They didn't know it at the time, but some of our colleges are still arguing whether or not they should teach sex, and we had it then, only we called it recess. These things I tell you are not necessarily stories. These are things that happen. I was born way back in the bloomer days. You all can remember, some of you old jokers I know can remember back in the bloomer days. And back in the mountains where I came from, they made bloomers out of flour sacks. I don't know if I was an alcoholic at this time or not, but I began to have trouble about the time self-rising flour come out. And back in the mountain where I come from, we drink anything that was too thin to chew. We really did. Some of it was awful. I mean, you could hardly stand it. But it would do great things for you. It won't grow hair. You can tell. But it was so bad that you could hardly stand this stuff. And back there in the mountain where I come from, we didn't carry guns to shoot people with necessarily. We would, but as long as they acted all right. But my old uncle was coming down out of the mountain one day, I'll never forget it, and he had a gallon of liquor and shotgun. He met a father on the road. He said, "Have a drink?" He said, "No, I don't drink." He said, "You do now." Anyhow, this gun on him, and he took a drink, and the fellow was gagging and going on. He said, "My God, ain't that awful?" And he said, "It sure is." He said, "Now you hold a gun on me while I take one." That's the way it was. I mean, it was bad, and I say. And this one room school that I told you about that I went to, see where I went to school, you didn't go to school till you graduated. I was born and raised on a farm. My father died when I was young. My mother run the farm with us boys, and when you got big enough to plow, you quit school. So I was going to school, and we had this very nice-looking teacher. And I was looking at her like a lot of you young fellows are looking at this program. Pretty nice for somebody else, but I don't know, not for me. And one evening, coming home from school, we were playing ball, and when the ball came down, she had her arms around me, and I turned around, and she kissed me. I jumped every fence from there home. I was big enough to plow. That's the way it went. And when I first came here, I like to talk to you younger fellows in AA, and then the old one can tell you what I said was wrong. I mean, because when I come here, there was no young people, no pretty young gals like they are now. I've seen marvelous things happen in this program. But when I got here, they were all as old-looking as I am now. They all had glasses and false teeth and was shaking and walking with canes and sitting around a table and said, "If you want what we got." I didn't want a damn thing they had, I didn't tell you that. But I didn't want what I had either. Well, I was older, younger than them, but I was shaking, you know, about nervous. I could thread an electric sewing machine while we're running. I mean, liquor had got to the point when after I stopped drinking that mountain liquor and went on that real strong stuff. I used to go back to the country, or when I got big enough to swim the river, I left home. I was a farmer, and I know enough about farming not to do it. When I got big enough to swim the river, I left home. And I went to Washington to make my fortune, and when I got to Washington, I started the second phase of my drinking on what they then called bottle and bond liquor. And I started the second phase of my drinking on 9th Street, which was known as Skid Row in those days. The whole place is now, but that's not it. We won't go into that, but... And I did. I worked a little to get a little money, to get a little strength, to get enough money to buy a little liquor, to get a little strength, to work a little more, to get a little more money, to buy a little more liquor, to get a little more strength, to work a little more, to get a little more liquor. I went around like that and my hair all flew out. I mean, it was just one big rat race. And we really had a time. I mean, it was so bad that I couldn't stand it myself. I got into the same amount of trouble that most alcoholics get into, never having been locked up too many times. I don't know why. I drove a car from, I lived 80 miles out of Washington, still do. And I drive that road day after day drunk. Day, week after week, whenever I get money enough to go home, I'd save up liquor. And I remember one time driving to town, we'd go to town, my brother and I, after they got legal liquor. I drank before the legal liquor came back. And we'd go to town, buy 3 fifths, one for me, one for him, and one to hide from each other. I mean, that's the way we do it. It really did. I don't know why we did this. But coming down the road, and I run out the road, through the fence and out in the field and turn around and come back through the fence again. He said, look, if you can't do any better than that, I'll drive. I said, hell, I thought you was driving. I mean, this was a normal way for an alcoholic to do. And, of course, I never had many wrecks. One bad one I remember very well. It was up around where I met my wife. She heard about it just before I got married, of course. I was going down the road, driving like a normal alcoholic, wide open, downhill. And I saw a bridge coming up the road, and I pulled over to let it go by. This was typical alcoholic thinking and doing. I mean, I thought about nobody else but me. All I wanted was just me to get enough liquor to not run out. I always had an awful fear of running out of liquor in the morning. Because I was shaking and I didn't like it. I felt an awful lot like about other people. And what happened to them, like the fellow come down the road in front of my brother's house one day and upset a load of hay right out in front of the house. He said, come on in, eat dinner, and I'll help you. He said, no, I got to go. The old man will raise hell. And he said, oh, come on in. He went on in, he eat. Sat there a while. He said, well, I got to go. He said, old man's really going to raise hell. And my brother said, what do you mean? Where's this old man? He said, he's out there under that load of hay. And this is the way I was operating. I really was. I didn't know. And any of you young people in here that are drinking, have been drinking and thinking that maybe getting married will help. Don't do her. No kidding. This all. I love you, Al-Anons. All of you. I want you to know it. But I'd like for you to know while we were drinking, you caused us a hell of a lot of trouble, too. I mean, it really interfered with our pleasure. So if you get to where you think that getting married might settle you down and quiet your drinking, it won't do it. You either are an alcoholic or you're not. I don't know which you are. None of my business. None of my business whether you quit or not. But I do know that getting married won't help. I got as sweet a wife as anybody would have want. I've been married to her for 50 years, the 15th of April. That's a long time for one woman. I really feel cheated sometime when I hear a lot of these fellows get up here and talk about my first wife, my second wife, my third wife. But I've seen some great things happen in here. I've seen a lot of these old drunks that have lost their wives and come in here and marry these pretty young girls. This is wonderful. It's a great. I just hate to see a fellow start a full day's work late in the evening. I mean, but this happened. This happens, and I know it. But I say, really, as well as I love my wife and as nice as she was, we never had fights when I was drinking. And as much as I think of her now and did then, still do and appreciate her, I felt an awful lot about her at times when I was drinking, like the old fella met a guy going down the street and he had a little dog under his arm. He said, "What you got there?" He said, "Oh, I got this for my wife." He said, "Oh, we thank God I could make a trade like that." These are the normal things that happen, so don't think that you can get by with it. But I say, I drank in Washington, and if you think you've been in a mess drinking, and had a lot of trouble with your work, drinking. I made a living hanging paper. I'm an old-time paper hanger. Now, that is a mess. So don't try it. It just won't work. I don't really know what to tell you people or young people what to do about this program except read the book, take the steps. You don't have to know what makes this program work. I don't think you ever will know anyway. I don't know what makes it work. And I've been sober a long time. In fact, I knew Bill Wilson. I heard Bill Wilson make his last talk, and I heard Dr. Bob make his last talk. So you know I've been around here quite a while. And I haven't had a drink since I came in. The doctor said that when he come to see me back in the days when the doctors would come out to see you, he told my wife there's a bunch of them getting together down there over the liquor store. He didn't well know what it was. And he said, "I don't know what they're doing, but whatever it is, he better start doing it." And she gave me a bunch of pills to take. I took two and went to bed. He gave her two more, said give him these about 6 o'clock when he wakes up. I woke up in about an hour and started out, and she gave me two more. She said she thought she'd kill me. She hoped a lot of times that she had, but it didn't kill me. And I got sober, and I haven't had a half drink since. You hear a lot about slips, and a lot of people do have them. You hear now, today, you hear a lot about your treatment centers. Well, the treatment I got wasn't too good. I'd go back in the mountains to sober up when I got drunk, go back in the mountains where I should have stayed in the first place. But I'd go back there and drink spring water and throw it up before it got warm. I can assure you that 5 days of this will get you just as sober as any treatment center in the country. And you'll remember just a whole hell of a lot longer. But this is what happened to me. That's the way I had to get mine. I love the country, and I love the good liquor, but I just couldn't stand the results. I mean, everything got to, kept getting a little worse and a little worse and a little worse. I'd save up my money, and I was a great hunter in my day. I was talking to a boy today who was talking about going to the mountain to hunt. And I lived back here in the mountain, and I was a great deer hunter. I hunted deer for 35 years. I'd save up my money and buy a lot of liquor to go hunting. Sometime I'd take shells with me, but I did. I hunted deer for 35 years. I never did get one. You'd think as much as I laid out in the woods drunk, one would have laid down by me and died. Well, this is the way I operate. But I say all of these things go into what the normal drunk has been through. I talked to a bunch of drunks in Washington for a long time. I mean by that I would talk to them. And then when I get through talking to them, they'd say, "I know that my wife has been talking to you. I could tell you, you young people, exactly what's going to happen to you if you keep drinking. But I don't know what will happen if you stop." Now, I tried drinking, and I tried to mount into something. And I worked at it hard. And I have found out over the years that the money and the great expectations that most all alcoholics have aren't necessarily the things you really need. I mean by that the great money will not make happiness. Life don't begin at 30, 40, or any particular age. Life begins when you're at peace with yourself, your fellow man, your God as you understand him. That's when you start living. And I don't know when this is, and a lot of drunks don't know when it's going to be. Attending meetings and learning to understand the God of your understanding will get you to the place that money won't get you. And I also have been told a lot of things that I didn't believe at the time I heard them. Things happened to me that if another drunk would have told me, I would not have believed them. But after I'd been sober a little while, I turned the radio on one night. And I heard a woman talking and on this radio in the middle of the night in the dark. I heard a woman, I told my wife, I said, "That's Marty Mann. I've heard her talk before." I turned it again in the middle of the night. I don't mind telling you these people that are dead. It was Del Sharbert said I could use his name. I got hit Del once, twice. I turned it again. I got Phil Linhart, a fellow in New York that I'd bought the last drink he had. Once, twice, maybe twice, three times, in the middle of the night, in the dark. Don't tell me what causes these things. I don't know. And I don't think anybody else does. I didn't know anything about a spiritual life when I came here. I lived way back there in the mountain, where the outhouse was outside, and I lived so far back we didn't have bathrooms in the house. And when I first came in, I didn't know whether this was a Catholic disease or not. It seemed to me like everybody was a Catholic. And we had one come back there and bought an old house and fixed it up and brought the outhouse inside, put in a bathroom, and we heard that he'd hurt himself. We went back to see about the old boy. And asked him what happened. He said, "Well, I hate to tell you, boys, but I fell off the commode and broke my arm." And the Lord didn't say anything. About halfway down the mountain, one of them looked at the other and said, "What's a commode?" He said, "How the hell do you think I know? I ain't no Catholic." This is how far back in the mountain I live. But I say, we had all kinds of people, and I have met all kinds of people, and all kinds of priests, lawyers, doctors. And we had, if anything, we had more trouble in Washington. I came in this program in Washington, D.C., and we had more trouble with the well-educated people. Some of them was so smart they couldn't get this program. They really were. I never run into anybody too dumb to get it. And the last words that Dr. Bob spoke to Bill Wilson was, "Please keep it simple. Don't louse it up. If you keep it much simpler than I am, you might not get it at all." But I learned through the teachings of this program. When I got in here, they told me to take it easy. And that I like. That and the anonymity is the only two things that I am sure that I have perfected in this program. You're not supposed to tell anybody else who's here or what your name is. You can guarantee you that I won't tell anybody what your name is. I'll forget it before I get out of here. And that take it easy, I'd have fell for that right away. So if you run into anybody tells you he loves his work, you watch him. He'll lie about other stuff, too. I mean, I never run into anybody that loved to work. And I didn't. And after I got in here, I'd made fewer arrangements. Poor man don't do business, he just makes arrangements. I had a few fellows working for me. As I say, I was a paper hanger and general repair and all in Washington, D.C. And I was working the program to the best of my ability, going to meetings and listening to what they were telling me. They didn't ask your talks and ice, and they told you what to do when I came in. Anyway, I thought I'd learn to take it easy, and I had these fellows working for me. One morning before breakfast, one of them called up and said he'd be late. When a painter's late, he's drunk. And one of the four breakfasts was over, two called up. The streetcar was on, one was on, had run into a bus, the other one was on. A likely drunken story. I told my wife, I said, it looked like it going to be a nice day, and I took off and out on the job, and the first job I got to, the plaster didn't show up. Man was mad. Said he hadn't fixed the ceiling right. And I believe the old alcoholic wheel began to turn. I went over on a job to collect some money. When I got there, the man said I'd charge him too much. He wasn't going to pay me. And I left there. I went on another job, and when I got there, this built-in radar that these non-alcoholic wives have that knows about where you are, whether you know it or not, she called me on the job and said, "Hurry home." I said, "What's wrong now?" She said, "Well, your brother is sick and drunk and got DTs again. He had them when they first come out. I mean, said he's got DTs again. You got to get him in the hospital." And I said, "Okay, I'll be right home." And said, "While you was gone, incidentally, the oil man came and the oil tank's leaking." I went directly home, and by the time I got home, about 11 o'clock, and I went in right through the office, into my room, into the bedroom, shut the door, and she came in. I was undressing. She said, "What are you doing?" I said, "These people told me to take it easy. And I've had enough things make me drunk half a dozen times. And I'm going to bed." And I did. I went to bed. And I stayed in bed till supper time, and supper time I got up and ate supper, and I went back to bed. I was afraid to go out. I was afraid I'd get drunk. And I didn't want to get drunk. As true as I'm standing here before you tonight, the next morning when I got up, every drunken painter I had showed up. The man had fixed his own ceiling. The plaster showed up. The fellow found the wrong bill, and he paid me. My brother was in the hospital doing good, and madame, the washer didn't swell up on the oil tank, and it quit leaking. I've been taking it easy ever since. I went to some meetings down in, I didn't retire. In 1962, I just give up. Okay. I could see I wasn't going to amount to nothing, so why keep trying? Well, I've been happy ever since. I live 6 months in Florida and 6 months in the Shenandoah Valley, and you can't hardly beat that if you got money. I went to a group down Boca Raton where they had nothing but millionaires, and they was the most unhappy bunch I ever saw. None of them knew for sure what they wanted. And me, I learned how to live. This is far greater than making a living, learning how to live. Here again, when you're at peace with yourself and your fellow man and your God, this is when you start living. I opened a little store on the front of my house so I could buy material that cost. And I was about 4 blocks from one of the biggest department stores in Silver Springs, Maryland, right outside of Washington. Never made a dime. I was more successful than a lot of the people that run that department store. They took in thousands and thousands of dollars, and some of them have to stay there till midnight to count the money. I could close at 4 o'clock and be in bed 2 minutes after four. That's what they were working for. Now, this may not be a story that suits many of you, but learning how to live is a lot more of a problem than making a living. I've been doing it accidentally since 1962. I make arrangements, you know, you got to do something. But this hard work, I found out I wasn't going to make. One day I closed this door, and it made sense to me. A lot of times I get up here and talk to people, I don't know what I'm going to say. And when I get through, I don't know what I've said, but then some of it makes sense to me. I closed this store one day about noon, and a fella come by, and I said, what you going to do? I said, I'm going fishing. And he said, well, what are you? My wife told me, she said, that's a fine way to run a store. I said, well, I'm running this one. When it starts running me, we'll close her. I asked this fella about going fishing with me, and he said, I can't go. I said, why can't you go? He said, I got to work. I said, why you got to work? He said, I'm broke. I said, how long have you been on this job? He said, 4 years. I said, hell, you'd have gone fishing 4 years ago and just got back. Now you think about that a little while, isn't it? I thought about it. And it works. Don't tell me that you have to be what most alcoholics think they want to be. Most alcoholics are what most people think they are anyway, not what they think they are. It's a sad thing to hear. A lot of people think they're going to amount to something. Now, as the lady told you, I've been sober. On the 4th of July, 1947, I had my last drink, as well as I can remember. And without counting it up, that's 42 years or right at it. But anyway, I say this. They told me when I came in here that walk the streets of your hometown sober is the best 12-step work you can do. So all I have to offer to you, you young, new people here tonight, is the power of example. And I'm living proof that you can stay sober and not amount to a damn thing. I mean, you really don't have to. You got a place to sleep, something to eat, and a bunch of people like this that love you. And love you for what you are, instead of what you think you are, or think you're going to be. And just because I've been sober a long time, don't come ask me why you stay sober, how you stay sober. You stay sober by not drinking. That's one of the greatest ways I know of. And there is no real answer. And you don't have to know. Don't go into a lot of trouble, worry about things that's none of your business. Go to enough meetings and it'll work. And I don't like the word work. I just let it. Really, it's that simple. I know a lot of people that worry about what makes it work. I worried about things that was done about your bad. I used to stay there in Luray where at spring, I was telling you, I laid beside and drank that spring water and threw it up before it got warm. And we had three trains going through Luray going south every day and two going north. And I laid there and worried about them getting all the trains down south. I'm not real bright, but if you run three south and two north, sooner or later you're going to get them all down here. Yeah, I did. I worried about how they got the trains back. They don't know any more about running the railroad than that. Let them get them all down here. Well, I still don't know how the hell they get them back. And I told this to a bunch of railroad men down in North Carolina, and they got them all upset. A lot of them afraid they're going to lose their job. The ones that wasn't, after hearing me talk, a woman come and told me, she said, "Look, my husband wasn't much good before he heard you." He said, "Now he ain't worth a damn." Well, I mean, this great utopia that you look for is not out there somewhere. It's here. It's where you are. It's what you are. And the way you feel. And the way you love. And I am thoroughly convinced, after many years of stealing, conniving, sneaking, doing all kinds of things that I shouldn't have been doing, that today that I know that it's impossible to do good for somebody without having it returned some way. I say, I've had things happen to me that you would not believe. And what difference does it make who you are if you're happy and got friends like you've got here? What do you want to be? Find the spiritual feelings you get, the many, many, many things that happen to you, and it's great. I cannot get it. I got feeling with my got my higher power that I understand. I feel like we had an old preacher up home one time was preaching, and he preached a fine sermon. When he got through, he said, "Now all of you want to go to heaven, stand up." And they all jumped up except this one old man, said, "Don't you want to go to heaven?" He said, "Yeah, when I die." But he said, "I thought you'd get up a load to go right now." let's learn to enjoy what we've got here. And do it one day at a time. That's all you can live anyway. You can't worry about things never gonna happen. I don't know what makes it work. I don't know what this God business is. It don't pay much, but they tell me the retirement benefits are great. This hereafter, we don't know about it. But we do know that the people that are living and trying to do something for somebody else are living an awful lot happier than the ones that are trying to get this, that, or the other from the other one. I heard when I first came in about what honesty was and how to operate. And one old joker sitting around the table, he says, "Boy, you know what honesty really is?" I said, "Yeah." I'd always been fairly honest, I thought. He said, "Honesty is the absence of intent to deceive." This not only hooked me, it damn near ruined my business. I mean, this complete honesty sometime will get you in trouble. I mean, by that you can keep, don't have to tell everything, you know, just like I said, that a lot of people don't like for it to know they're in AA. We have a lot of people that go to different towns for their meetings. We raised 2 kids in this program. We now have 19 grandchildren. So they found out what operates pretty good. This boy that I mind was coming in, he was about 5 years old, I guess, when I came in. Anyway, he grew up. When he was about 17 or 18, I don't know, he stayed out one night, and my wife was worried about him. And you wouldn't believe it by looking at me. I can remember having been at 17 or 18 one time. She kept running to the window and kept me awake. I figured I knew about what was going on. She acted like she didn't. But finally he came home. And the next morning, about 7 o'clock, they was out in the kitchen and she was getting his breakfast. And he was out there and she was asking him all kinds of questions. We raised these kids in AA. And she was asking these questions and I was real proud of the boy. He was answering, wasn't telling her a damn thing. She kind of got upset at me, you know, said, "Why aren't you going to say anything?" The boy would always listen to me. I said, "Just fix it all. Keep quiet and I'll tell it." And he looked at me a little scared because he'd always listened to me. And I said, "Let's keep it simple, son. If you had a decent girl out, you shouldn't keep her that long. If she wasn't decent, it oughtn't take you that long. I mean, it's simple." Real problem, your people got to say out and about. I don't will make it. All they do this is way of the show, not to run after fall. We good. Even if I'm sick, I'll be drunk. I can tell you now that I am proud to live the way I live, to find out the way to live, that I become an alcoholic. And I could not think myself into the right way of living. I tried for many years thinking I was going to do better. I kept thinking I was going to do better. I had to live myself into the right way of thinking. I could not think myself into the... The way to do this is God's way of running this show. This is not our world to run. And we don't have to throw up all the time we're going through it. I believe if liquor hadn't made me so sick, I'd still be drinking. But I can assure you now that I am proud to live the way I live, to find out the way to live, that I've become an alcoholic. And I could not think myself into the right way of living. I tried for many years thinking I was going to do better. I kept thinking I was going to do better. I had to live myself into the right way of thinking. I could not think myself into the right way of living. It's that simple. If you live right, you learn to think right. sounds like a easy job. But just try it. Do what you know is right, the right time. I mean, I don't know how to tell you to do it. As I say, I forget a lot of things that I think about telling you until I get up here. And I'm getting so old I can't remember all of the good things that's happened to me. I remember back one time that I was home and we had a big maple tree out in the middle of the yard. And it was having a storm and raining and pouring down just like it was when we came in here. And I said, I wish the Lord had some wood. And about that time, the biggest limb you ever saw about that big fell right smack in front of me. And I said, boy, I'm sure glad I didn't ask him to chop it up. These are the simple things that really happen in life that we don't know about. We don't know when they're going to happen or what's going to happen. I do know that you have to do a little something on this AA program if you want to stay sober. Which reminded me of the story of the man who was going on a trip and he took his secretary with him. She'd been his secretary for a long time. And they got to the hotel and they only had one room. Said, you mind being my secretary's using the same room? She said, no, indeed, that's all right. Been my secretary long. They went in, got his one room, hung blankets up in between the beds. Went to bed and lay there a little while, and she said, I'm cold. And said, the wind is up over there. And she said, I know it is, I'm cold. He got up and closed the window and got back in his own bed. She says, I'm still cold. Said, there's cover over there on the chair. She said, I know there is, but I'm still cold. He said, well, let's play like we're married. She says, all right. He said, well, get up and get your own damn cover. this is what you got to do. You got to. Nobody else can get this program for you. So if you don't do anything, don't expect anything. It's here for you. My wife says I shouldn't say this, but I often have. As an old fellow in our town got married, and was married about 6 months, and they said, how do you like married wife? He said, fine. There she is if you want her, and there she is if you don't want her. AA, here it is if you want it, and here it is if you don't want it. I don't believe you can force anybody to join AA or stay sober unless they want to stay sober. But you've got to get in here and do something. So don't expect anything if you don't put anything into the program. Now I remember very well an old boy up home that was going into the service, and had a horse that he liked real well. Back when they were doing the 2-year draft, and he wanted to keep this horse, so he took him down to the fellow's house and he said, what are you keeping my horse for? He said, $50 a month and I get the manure. He said, that's too much. He went to another pole house and he said, what are you keeping my horse for? And the fellow said, $25 a month and I get the manure. He said, I'm going to be gone 2 years. That's a lot of money. He went down the road and he pulled in an old ramshackly barn and he said, mister, what are you keeping my horse for? He said, $10 a month. He said, who gets manure? He said, $10 a month, there won't be any. Don't you come to this program and expect you just to sit here and get up and go out and somebody else do all the work and you stay sober. Herein lies the way to live. And I don't know how to tell you other than to get at peace with your God as you understand him and your fellow man and start living today. Every day you let go by without having a good time is missing. While you're alive, live a life of clover, because when you did all over. I've heard it said, and I believe this, great love has man for his brother, greater yet for his mother, but no greater love was ever known than one old drunk for another. This I believe. I feel about like all of you, that I love all of you. And I feel like the two old drunks met on the street. One of them said, I don't remember your name, but said your breath smells familiar. And this will happen. You'll meet people that you have no idea all over the world. I have met them. And I've looked back over the places I've been over the years. And I have friends all over this country. And I get mail from foreign countries. There's no better way to live than we have learned to live in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it is and can be and will be whatever you need, not everything you want. If you got everything you wanted, you'd hear a lot of drunks say, well, I didn't get what was coming to me. You're damn lucky you didn't get what was coming to you, in many cases. But you get what you need when you need it. And if you don't drink, you won't get drunk. It sounds too simple to be true. But I know a lot of people, and don't get the idea you know how to keep people sober. I got very brilliant after I was in a year or so. I knew all about it. If I could have seen you then, I could have told you how it worked. Because I got invited, believe it or not, I got invited to speak to a bunch of doctors out at the health department in Washington, D.C., one of the great institutions in the country. I thought this was a pretty smart deal. Here I am, a mountain grade school boy, and a bunch of doctors want me to talk to them. Well, I got a good lesson in humility. I did about the same time. They said we worked out like the census taker was coming around about that time. And he asked this old lady where her husband was, and he said he's in the penitentiary. And said, well, where's your other son? He said, he's on chain gang. And said, where's your third son? Said, oh, he's in Yale. Said, what? Said, yeah, he's going to Yale. I said, well, what's he studying? This is strange. He said, he ain't studying nothing. They studying him. So that's what they was doing to me. And as smart as they are, they have never found out a cure for alcoholism. But if you don't stop drinking. To me, and you can use it in any walk of life, any way, anywhere, anytime. To me, it works out like the old man with the fiddle. And then I'll let you all start dancing. I'm getting a little too old to dance. This old man bought him a fiddle, a one-string fiddle, one of them great big long things, and he seesawed that job. His wife about to go nuts. You know, she said, I don't get it. Most people run their hand up and down the neck of that thing. Said, yeah. Said, I know they do. Said, they're looking for something. I found what I want. Thank you.